Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok.
And this is the Clone Wars Report. The news is now being announced by Akira Dak.
Yes.
I actually would like that if real world news started instead of with a just a primal scream of some kind. It would be more honest.
On the wings of Kira Dax. Yes.
Okay, you have anticipated my very first question. So we are here to discuss the third episode of season 7 of the Clone Wars, which is titled On the Wings of Kira Dax. And the first question I wanted to ask you, big music fan, you're a DJ. What band, what singer would write and sing the song On the Wings of Kira Dax?
Who does that? Who does that actual song I made reference to?
On the Wings of Love. The 80s?
Yeah, I think it's... I can't remember that.
I don't know.
Definitely wasn't the 90s. I think I would love to see in Star Wars universe this song done.
Yeah, On the Wings of Kira Dax. It's just such a soft rock hit.
It is. Wonderfully titled.
Yeah.
I don't know... I'm I'm starting to forget anything I had known from the animatic versions of this and everything.
Oh, good.
Which is nice. But I can't. I was like, was this originally the title? Or did someone, it was like, you know what would be funny? Name this a song title.
On the Wings of Kyrodex. Yeah, it's. It, I think it maybe could pop up in a John Hughes film.
Yeah.
Right, you know?
Definitely. Definitely.
Jedi Academy by John Hughes. On the Wings of Kyrodex. Anyway, we are going to dive in here. We always like to talk about our actual viewing process. Yeah. Did you stay up late to watch it, or has this settled into a morning routine of some kind for you?
I was traveling this past week, so I was in Vegas the night it came out, and definitely up late, but not watching the Clone Wars. So it was a come back Saturday, settle in and watch it. And as you and I talk about, like, you know, that first viewing is, it's for me.
Yeah.
And that almost ended up being the only viewing. And I was
really?
Oh boy, I'm going to show up to this episode really unprepared today. I was able to get one in this morning when you suddenly get an email that says your rental car is due now, and I had to rush over at like 8 in the morning and get it back. Wings of Accentra. But I was able to watch it again. So it was a different experience this week. But it's nice. This was a week where it was nice to be like, oh, I got a Clone Wars to watch.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's there for me.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. Nice. Yeah, I was in the same position where I like staying up late, especially for The Mandalorian. That was really fun. Yeah. But there's something, I think maybe it is because as adult as it can be, it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch in the morning. I got up on Friday morning this time. My wife had bought some crumpets and some salmon. So I had some crumpets and salmon and Kyrodex. It was I felt very elegant. It was lovely.
Where does one buy crumpets locally?
I think not Ralph's. Maybe Ralph's. Gelson's. I think it's a Gelson's purchase. Okay. They're not as exotic as they say. They always get used for, are you going to get crumpets? Like, they're British English muffins. They're not like true. For the Queen only. Like, they're not difficult to come by in the UK or America.
Like Meghan and Harry are like, well, I will miss the crumpets if we leave.
It is sort of like somebody in America going like, oh, are you going to eat your English muffins? Like, they're not there. You get them at the store. It's not a.
That's awesome.
Anyway, this is not the English muffin report or the crumpet report.
Yeah.
The point is, it is fun to watch it in the morning like a cartoon treat, like you would with your Fruit Loops when you're a kid, except for me, it's crumpets and salmon because I'm a weirdo. But I very much enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Did get startled because strangely, mm-hmm. for some reason, my Disney Plus account had auto set to being dubbed in Japanese. So I hit the button and a Japanese voice just yelled the Clone Wars basically in Japanese. I was like, what the hell
is
like,
going on?
Yeah. So I figured that out and then I settled into enjoying the episode.
That's awesome. Yeah. I finally went into my Disney Plus settings this week as well to change some things. It's not that, but yes.
What did you change?
Autoplay episodes.
Oh, okay.
I like watching the credits.
I like it,
and
too.
I know all you have to do is slide and select the credit box, and
it's
it pops back up.
Pain in the ass.
Just let me choose to go to the next episode.
I like pausing on the voice actors.
Yeah,
and you have it anyway. Yeah. Anyway, let's. This is not a review of Disney Plus. Let's get back to the Wings of Kyrodex. So, what was your overall reaction to the episode?
Again, another episode I really enjoyed in this run. I don't know if I'm just so hyper-focused on it right now because like we talked before, never had a chance to really watch Clone Wars in this way of, got to review it or focused on it. I think this is an episode that 5 years ago or so, whenever, you know, longer away from the start of the Clone Wars, a long time ago, I think this episode would have slid into the background while I was watching and just like, I got to do the dishes. I got to write an essay. I got to do something else. Not because the episode's bad, but just it's a lot of action and you're kind of like going on. But because I was focused on it, I really got to enjoy it. It looks great. We keep talking about how great some of the shots are even and some sequences. So I really, really enjoyed it. I thought, and we're definitely going to dive into themes, but just simple, direct themes that were easy to understand, fun to enjoy, and made me think of other parts of Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely the way I felt, too, is a episode of Clone Wars, when I got to watch in a binge way, I would have been like, great, they're escaping, there's action, that's great, let's go. And I think in some ways that is what's going on in this episode. The Clone Wars does just value, hey, we get to tell the story of the Clone Wars, where there's a lot of clones fighting droids and Jedi do cool stuff. And this is definitely an episode that centers on that. But there are those ideas there, you know, if you really want to look for them and celebrate them. So I thought there was great action in this. And a lot of it is just we are following the adventure. They need to escape. The Poltecs need to defend themselves. All that. But I continued to enjoy just this environment, the look of Wat Tambor's horrible experiment, the fantasy design of the Kyrodax, and the great kind of yellowish mist. It's all really, really cool and beautiful. There's some great design that just remind me of all sorts of different science fiction. But I also just really, even though it was a light touch on character development, I really felt for Echo and felt worried about Echo. Like, I felt like, is Echo going to fall off that Kyrodax? You know, is Echo going to just, like, they're going to unplug him and he's going to die? Did they have a subroutine in his brain? I felt for Echo and I was so successfully angry at Wat Tambor.
Yeah.
So just like the basics of drama, this episode was like, felt fair. Sorry for the hero, really hated the villain.
Yeah. Yeah. We shared a similar feeling, Echo, that when they walk out onto the pipe to escape and he's like second.
Yeah.
I was like, no. He's got to go third.
What are you doing?
Someone's got to be between them.
He's never walked in those mechanical legs before. Come on, guys.
Anakin's busy leading the way. Rex, go first.
Yeah. And some great beats of comedy as well.
There really was.
Really successful. Because I think sometimes the Clone Wars has a like, no, a part of this is for kids. So the comedy can be very straightforward. In this one, I felt like it was still straightforward, but really successful moments of comedy for me. So let's dig into those themes. Like you were saying, I don't think they were subtle, and they are big Lucas themes, but the one that I felt like they're going throughout this arc, but the one that really popped to me is this direct conflict between the organic and the mechanical.
Right.
You know, and we talk about that theme a lot, and, you know, I think it really has its roots even in A New Hope, the difference between a targeting computer and trusting your instincts. And sometimes you can find it in Star Wars and interesting subtle ways, or you can kind of choose to see a beat that way. This is very direct, right? A human is plugged into a machine against his will. So we have that like right there on the surface of with what's going on with Echo's connection to the machinery.
Absolutely. It's used as a big turning point, plot point. It was really, I think you just hinted at it too, but it's like hard to see what really had become of Echo, even in animation form. I'm just like doing the like, that hurt. Oh, that hurts to watch.
Right.
The hand and everything. And certainly another one of those reflections of what Anakin's to become. If you just, Hey, Annie, stop and look at that.
Especially later on when Rex is giving his speech to the Poltex. Yeah. He's just like, look at what they did to him.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to you again? I think in particular, it was just great visuals and great sound design that the once tech frees him from that idea of he's going to die if he's not attached to the machinery.
Yeah.
You know, having that stake, then tech fixing that. But then that gross kind of puff of air is those things get pulled, the cables get pulled out.
It just yanked out, man.
Yanked out. And the back ones were like, okay, that's gross and painful. And like the head one, really? Okay, come on. Yeah. And then Echo having that very human sense of humor of Rex kind of coming back to himself and Rex asking him how he is and him saying, I have a headache. And Rex saying, better to feel something than nothing.
Yes. It's like a great U2 lyric, you know, a heart that bleeds is a heart that beats. I enjoyed the little exchange. Good old clones going back in time, you know?
Yeah. So that was that level of that theme was really on the surface. For me, it was also reflected by this new thing that I don't believe we've seen before. Wat Tambor's Organic Decimator. That sounds like a Beatles song. that Organic Decimator.
Wat Tambor's Organic Decimator.
I mean, just the name.
Yeah.
Organic Decimator, again, really positioning the bad guys as the symbol of this incrustation of rigid machinery.
Yes.
Versus creative, flowing, intuitive.
And a fun, I say to a killing machine, a fun reversal of just like the fact that this machine would go after organic folks, where we're so used to seeing, even we saw in the episode of, you know, blow something up and all the droids fall down.
Right, the droid popper grenades, yeah.
Yeah, so that was an interesting twist on that.
Yeah, I just thought it looked cool.
I liked it,
weird purple lightning arcing out.
Yeah, and I know there was a sequence, I think I do recall seeing that was cut, of where he used it on a Poltec or something as an example. I do remember seeing that.
Okay.
But to see it fully, again, fully realized. And these episodes have these little changes all the way through. And it's I no longer remember what's happening, which is great. But to see it fully realized, I thought it looked so good. It was also played kind of wonderfully for comedy in a little way. I don't know. There's a moment where they're putting it through the hole and Wat Tambor and his aides all kind of look in like, and I was like, it was a fun, dangerous sequence.
Yeah. It was these three villains who all look kind of similar, these muffin top villains. The really comic, oh no, when when Wrecker blows everything. And it's all a little bit played for comedy too, because we've got the funny beats of Wrecker throwing people into the shaft without warning them, and Wrecker not quite realizing how much danger he's in as Anakin is pulling him away from those purple lightning arcs, and Wrecker going, oh no, I don't want this.
And I gotta tell you, like, I'm getting caught up in the story and not remembering all the beats of this arc. I was like, wait, does Wrecker die here? Is he doing a self-sacrifice kind of go, I'll save you thing? So,
and you were happy to see Wrecker live?
I was. Wrecker's become one of my favorite characters.
The comedy is really successful with Wrecker, I think. So continuing with this organic versus mechanical theme, I know we talked last week about we're going to get to see more of those D-Wing droids, including their wings. And I think just that direct contrast between here are these kind of ugly, monstrous flying things. We talked a lot last week about how the D-Wings look like tortured abominations.
Yes.
Like, and we have wings. That in combination with the Kyrdax that their writers seem to have to kind of bond with a little bit, all that. And just seeing that direct contrast between these two flying things.
I love the visual. I thought the design on the wings looked really cool. It's still funny and weird to me to see these flying D-Wing droids and to hear kind of like the same but altered kind of Roger kind of voice.
Yeah, it seems like they've tried to dial the wacky down just a little bit.
They're more threatening. Their tone is more threatening, but they're still kind of like as one flying down. I don't know why. I do like the battle droids. I think Battlefront 2 has made me appreciate playing them more.
Yeah.
I've long since gotten over the Roger of it all, but I really do like the design of these droids, the feel, the look, a little more threatening.
Yeah.
And abomination, as we keep saying.
Yeah.
It works for me.
Yeah, there's so many great things about them, but it was fun to see, these ideas of like, hey, they figure out how to turn the Kyrdax, and the D-Wing droids keep flying straight on. And
the Eagles are coming.
Yeah, and the watching the Kyrdax and the D-Wings just made me think of 80s Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
And it's because the Hawk people and all that. But it looked very old school fantasy again in a fun way.
Oh, yeah. Very 30s, 40s, 50s sci-fi vibes.
Yeah.
I mean, Wat Tambor immediately makes it 1951 all the time.
Tune your AM dial to 1951 Wat Tambor. And then, of course, for me, the last thing that really resonated in this organic mechanical theme is just the big battle between the Separatist droids and the Poltecs.
Yeah.
You know, Star Wars has so many different instances of the closer to the Earth, more native group of people fighting, you know, the big mechanized army, you know, I think starting really with the Ewoks versus the Empire. And this felt like yet another instance of that.
Yeah, you could say it was a repeated beat from many Clone Wars episodes, like you just said yourself, the big ones, Ewoks. But I think the galaxy's big, and they still need to go. It just makes sense to me that a culture would be out there going, we're not sure what's going on here.
Yeah.
We have to choose. And having that be part of the message, but not the big message, was fine for me,
And it's not like the Poltecs are like, weapons, what are those? Like, they're walking around with those weird sort of shell claw sword things.
They looked like they were playing a rec room Smash Bowl game or something. But I did like that. And I like the leader. I don't recall the leader's name at this point. I really like the design.
The design is amazing, right?
Yeah. Face, everything very expressive. Good stuff. The animation's just great this season, we keep saying. But something I like. And he was, out there in action.
Yeah.
Pulling a wounded guy back. Yeah.
And I just, I can't say enough about how much I like the sound design of their language and their voices. And like that they sound both kind of frightening and honorable. And like, yep. Yes, of course, we can't understand that language. And yep. It's such a great design. The other theme that popped to me, and theme is maybe even a little bit much because it's just pretty blatantly said by Wat Tambor.
Yeah.
Is just this idea of greed.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that I highlighted that is I think that idea of greed is more important to Lucas than we sometimes focus on as Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
I think maybe because it's not a part of Yoda's initial steps to the dark side list that he gives to Anakin. But there's a lot of great videos of Lucas talking about the nature of the light and the dark and talking about greed, that desire to have more and more power. And that's why the Jedi are really reluctant to do things, because they don't want more power. They simply want to use the power they have, because wanting more is greedy. And it once you really tune into that idea of greed being important to Lucas, you do start to hear it a lot in the prequels.
Yep.
You know, Yoda mentions it. That's one of the reasons that Anakin is kind of upset with himself at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, because he's like, when he's talking about, I'm not the Jedi I should be, I want more.
Mm-hmm.
So that idea of greed being really, really popping and being utterly the surface of the bad guy was really powerful to me.
Yeah, I like it, especially in terms of the separatists, because we can sometimes have those conversations or go down that path of Mina Bonteri always comes up of just like, hey, there were some things they had some good questions on overall. You know, you can approach it from a distance or individuals. And overall, though, the separatists, Trade Federation, Techno Union, like driven by this greed and this desire, there might be some desire for peace. At least that's what Newt Gungray says at the very end. But I don't think he lived his life like that.
No.
And this is to see it just in terms of, if you're looking at the Republic versus the separatists and seeing that way. Not saying the Republic is innocent of charges against them, but to have Wat Tambor, a leading member, at least in terms of the fandom of the separatists, to kind of be like dropping those terms like return on investment and property and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
Really fit in well with the Clone Wars overall.
Yeah. And a couple of lines that popped to me in specific. Well, I mean, just the big idea that the arc of Wat Tambor in this episode is he is mad about the financial loss of Echo and his equipment.
Yeah.
And, you know, going on to the end even of talking about the setup for next week's episode is I have an idea to recoup our profit losses.
Yeah.
Is really powerful. He says they took it, Techno Union property.
Yeah.
So just the power of calling Echo it is not only about the greed of it, but goes back to that issue of humanity versus machinery.
And this extra layer to clones as property or tools of war versus individuals too plays into that as well. And for Echo, you know, fingers crossed, recovering
yeah.
in some ways.
Yeah. Definitely some fears there. So yep. What hit you about that? Because he mentions it basically three times. He calls it. He talks about a blow to the profit margin, and then that cliffhanger at the end of recouping the losses.
I think it speaks a lot of you know, not just on the base level stuff and in story Star Wars, but if you play it out, just like when you see things or people as assets, or you pull too far back and you don't see the individual in front of you, I think when you don't, you're less likely to care for them, less likely to have empathy for the situation, compassion, all those good words we should have in our lives and souls, to have it just so pulled far back. It goes outside of the story to, you know, I always say, like, if you don't see it, you often don't feel it.
Right.
And to have Wat Tambor just to, you know, here's part of, even if the separatists started out in some good point of view, or, hey, there's some things we want to talk about, or everything, and Dooku comes in and flames up their passions. Even if they had that good starting point, these leaders have allowed them to be pulled far back.
Right.
And it's just one of my things that I try to work on better and try to, you know, how do you break down titles, names, groups to the individual in front of you, and to see Wat Tambor just so blatantly be like, nope, money, investment. You know, I don't think money's investment are inherently bad if you don't, you know, if you do some good things with it, but you know what I mean? Like, to see him just kind of be so cold, so calculating, it just really works in Star Wars storytelling and helps drive the point home outside of Star Wars to me.
Yeah, I think that's really eloquently said. And one of the big interesting things to me about the Clone Wars is that it is Lucas really getting to play.
Yeah.
In every element of Star Wars that he cared about, and you know, Filoni even saying, hey, I still talk to George, yeah, you know, when I have a question. These things were created,
yeah,
you know, when Lucas was still around. Just that Clone Wars is everything from, I didn't get to see him fight enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted more adventure serial, you know? Yeah. I want the droids to have a wacky adventure. I want this, I want that. And for Lucas to really have this perspective that greed is a danger because it is exactly that. It's not having things. It's not being successful.
Yeah.
That is bad from his perspective. It is wanting more for yourself to the point that you dehumanize others.
Yeah.
And to think about that from Lucas's perspective, how you could look at George Lucas and go, that guy doesn't believe in the accumulation of wealth.
Right.
Clearly.
Yeah.
With all of the action figures I've ever bought, he's okay with accumulating wealth.
Yeah.
I think that hope is just to not do that to the point where you see other human beings as nothing but dollar signs.
Yeah.
You know, in his life, struggles with feeling dehumanized by corporations, I think, has led him to attempt to lead a life where he tries to give back. You know, he's building this narrative museum. Yeah.
Right.
To give back. If you look through his life, there are many moments where he has tried to give back.
And I think it's interesting, and this has turned into a George Lucas thing, he was a millionaire before Star Wars. If you read his story and the American Zoetrope stuff and working with Coppola, he did have a million. Like, he hit that number.
Yeah.
So he didn't, it wasn't like he wrote on a scratch pad and Star Wars made him. He carried in some of those lessons and some of those beliefs into telling that story.
And if Empire failed, he would have been broke. He would have had nothing.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. And he puts it all on the line. Yeah, I'm not saying, But, you know, it's like, I think so. He had some of that point of view of like, hey, yeah, you know, I could easily go this direction or, you know, he's been pretty consistent his entire life.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But yeah. And he would not have liked Wat Tambor.
No, I think Wat Tambor is probably based on some guy at some corporate office that he really had a beef with.
George's, you know, interesting relationships with unions.
Yeah.
I mean, specifically to Writers Guild and Directors Guild.
Yes.
To have that. You know, I would dare say I don't think George is an anti-union guy, but to have these specific two.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if Wat Tambor has anything to do with that.
I mean, I think it goes to
union.
The entire story of the prequels, right? Because even I think the Jedi are heroes to him, but even then he's like, when an organization gets too big and loses track of who it's supposed to be helping, bad things happen. Yeah. So I love that on one hand, for me, this episode is like, it's mostly just continuing the story in action.
Yeah,
but these little ideas are the tip of the iceberg to these huge things that make Star Wars meaningful.
Totally.
I also like that we see a little bit of the contrast of greed in the Poltex being like, they could have just said, get the hell out of our village.
Yeah.
You know, but they chose to help one another. They chose to be symbiotic with the clones. Mm-hmm. They're coming for us and they're coming for you. Let's work together. All that.
We can dive in more, but I just love Rex's moment. I love his little speech.
Yeah.
Love that it came from him.
Yes, yes. We will definitely dive into that in our second half here. We've been talking about the morals of the episode, the moral that was flashed on the screen and yelled at me in Japanese before I turned that off. Survival is one step on the path of living.
So this got me thinking, and shout out to our buddy Alex Damon, former and once again down the line will be a guest on the show, I'm sure. He pointed out that this changed from the original episode, which it was in War There's No Neutrality, or paraphrased, but I think that was it. And I do agree that's like, number one, we have kind of seen that before in Star Wars. So to focus on this, to know that they changed to that, it had me doing like let me do a little test. Let me take a little, get on my number two pencil and bubble the right answers for what this means.
Yeah.
I don't know. I took it very personal. Survival is you can take it as surviving, paying your bills. I walked away from a car accident or you overcome an illness. There's a lot of ways to look at survival and go on. But I was trying to, related to Echo, man.
Yeah.
And his good attitude.
Yeah.
Regardless of the dark tones or whatever's in his eyes, they're damn, but just to be that, I got a headache. Like, we're alive. We're alive. And that's sometimes what matters.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt very direct to Echo. I admit, when I first saw it, I was like, well, that's quite straightforward. Yes. Yeah. You can't live if you're not alive.
Right. Yeah,
but yes. But then I think it's got some nice nuance to it for me, that idea of that is the first thing you need, right?
Yeah.
To just be alive, to live, to fight another day. Yeah. The idea of one step on the path of living, the fact that it's one step is almost this idea that that's the beginning.
Yeah.
The baseline you need in order to get to higher fulfillment of being a human.
Yeah. And you could look at it, and we'll see, again, seeing what happens. We keep making the jokes of anything that's what's coming in. I got to tell you, again, I'm not joking. I honestly don't remember the next, what might be happening next.
That's so great.
I just, if luckily my mind washes things away easier and easier as I get older. Survival is sometimes the hardest thing to appreciate, hardest thing to do, especially if you're coming out of trauma. And if you're looking at what Echo's going on, what's going on with him, he has every reason to wither up and give up, and I'm pulling for anything that might happen, or pulling for the lessons that can come out of that. So it could be even taken on a pretty deep level.
Yeah.
Beyond just one step forward.
Yeah. It also strikes me as you could interpret it as a more eloquent, different point of view way to say what was the original one, which I hadn't known about. In war, there is no neutrality. Right. That idea of like, well, yes, if you don't get involved with the war, you might live, but what is going to be the quality of your life if you are living with somebody's boot on your neck?
That definitely going to obviously apply to that Poltec moment. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it in those ways. Yeah.
Because I think when I started thinking about it, the thing that flashed in my mind immediately was Jyn Erso.
Yeah.
Particularly as her story gets developed in Rebel Rising, where she's got the, I don't want to be involved in this. There's the, every time I see the Empire or the Rebellion, there's just explosions and death.
Right.
I just want to survive. And there's great arcing story of Jyn getting to that point where just surviving isn't enough. I have to live for something.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a powerful theme in Star Wars. And it's okay that sometimes that might be repeated, but I do like you spinning it back to the Poltex. That does make a lot of sense. That you know, cool. Now you've got to survive, and then you can have a better life if you get it and you're willing to die for it. All those kind of things. That's I like these themes that can go into how you interpret them too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it makes it a lot
part
of fun.
Part of the fun.
Yeah, because some of them are just like, don't lie. they're not quite that simple, but yeah.
Clone Wars rages, built on lies. Don't lie.
Don't lie. The ultimate episode or moral of Clone Wars. Episode would be great. Teaching everybody how to not lie. Yeah. We always like to talk about the action in the first half here. Did you have a favorite action moment in this very action-packed episode?
I did. And there's a lot to choose from, a lot one might talk about when we break down the episode a little bit more in the second half. But my favorite moment was not, it was a moment of action. It was smart action. I loved when they were welding the doors shut.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. It was just like, well, that's smart. And I'm like, how come other clones haven't done that? You got to be this bad batch to figure that one out. I don't know if I've seen it before or missed it.
You got a sense that they've done that a lot too, right?
The fact that they're one on top, one on the bottom. Let's get this done. Meet in the middle. Let's do it. I was like, this is, I like this.
Team. Yeah. There's a lot in the action that was about their unity, right?
Yeah.
Especially after starting with the Bad Batch and the Regs kind of being a little bit out of sync. And all of them were kind of so working in unison. That was really cool to see.
Yeah,
I had two kind of favorite moments of action. The D-Wing sticking his head through the doors. Was really, you know, gross horror. That really, you know, was like John Carpenter, like, oh, God, the thing got its head in the door. And the fact that Wrecker just rips it off.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. It was shining like.
Yes.
Here's D-Wing droid. They're so dinosaur-like in their design, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's a couple shots of them walking forward. It was like, it looks like velociraptors or something, like T-Rexes.
There were D-Wings all up in the kitchen.
Yeah. But that moment, I'm glad you mentioned that moment. I did, and it was, again, this is where the 2000, 20 or probably 18, 2017 animation, like, looks so good.
Yeah.
It's just, it looked really good.
It looks great. I also loved the big Anakin springing into action. That was great. And the exchange of dialogue of still showing off General, you know me, Echo.
Right.
It's a really nice woman, and always great to reinforce, like, yeah, the Jedi make a big difference on the battlefield.
Yeah.
I like it when that gets emphasized. All right, so that is our look at kind of some of the big picture stuff. We are going to take a quick break, and then we are going to dive into all the little details. We will be back in just a moment, and we will still be on the wings of Caradax.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we are are back, jumping off the wings of the Caradax to go down into the Village of Details. So just going to kind of walk through the episode. I don't think this episode had as many of... it didn't have an episode like or a scene like last week's episode with the Padme and the Obi-Wan and that kind of that rippling out, oh my God, this is huge Star Wars, you know, lore, canon. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this was a lot more about these people, these moments, these details.
Yeah.
But I did think there was some interesting stuff. So we learn early on that this mission isn't authorized. I mean, we knew that, but they talk about it more, that Anakin and the clones can't call for help. Did that hit you? Did that successfully raise the stakes for you? That reminder that a big platoon wasn't swooping in, Obi-Wan wasn't coming in to the rescue. Yeah. It was this small group alone.
I really like it. I really like it in terms of the episode. It's not like a sitcom bottle episode, but it's like, you got to deal with this. You're all together. You're not getting out of it. You're either out of it together or not. I did have a fun reaction. It's, I guess if I was working for one of those clickbait websites, I'd be like, plot hole. Wasn't. It's just a fun thing of like, what if they did? What if they called back and said, hey, Anakin here. We got Echo. Guess what? He is alive. Guess what? He's been using him, and we need help. Would anyone in the Jedi Order be like, nah, unauthorized mission? I don't know. But I don't need it to happen. I don't need a scene explaining to me why Obi-Wan didn't show up or anything like that.
It would have been nice to just cut to Mace Windu stroking his chin, trying to decide. Because they do say that they sent out a request for evacuation and haven't heard anything. And then Anakin's like, well, it's not an authorized mission. We probably won't.
Yeah, which again, it's part of the fun of just Bad Batch being there. It's one of those, you know, this is the Expendables. This is like, you're going in, you're not coming out. So I did like it a lot. I had a lot of fun with the moment.
Yeah. I think for me, what I liked about it is... you know, kind of in Star Wars lore, like that's Anakin Skywalker. And we have been treated to multiple episodes of the Bad Batch, absolutely destroying. And then Rex, like on one hand, you're like, well, it's fine. They'll plow through everything.
Yeah.
So it was nice to try to reset those stakes of like, yeah, no, they're the big heroes and they're badasses and they're cool. But this is the horror of the mechanization.
Yeah.
They have endless numbers of these droids. And even these collection of, you know, ultimate Star Wars badasses are like, damn, we have to retreat.
Do you want to specifically get into that pipe scene is what I'm calling it?
Yeah.
I loved it because there's some great comedy and Wrecker just keeps winning me over because I'm afraid of falling too, like a lot of people are. I'm a oafie that's just run through things like Wrecker. I'm just not as strong. So I like that scene is going on and it's like, all right, cool. You know, something's probably going to happen. First of all, you get that epic shot. That's one of my favorite shots in recent Star Wars.
Right. When they're in the middle of the pipe, the middle and the droids on either side.
And it's there for a second. Frame that, put it on a wall.
Beautiful, beautiful yellow misty clouds. Yeah.
There's something about Anakin going, go back. And they can't get out of it without the Caradax.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, and I made the joke to the reference to the Eagles from Lord of the Rings, but it takes, you and I have talked about, your first thing you loved about the Porg screaming on the fire. It's like, it's there too. It's part of this. It's feeding off Chewie. Let's go fight. And to have, Caradax are in this too. And they join in the fight later. But I thought that was a great moment that they couldn't just get out of it.
Yeah. And then Anakin was concerned.
Then Anakin was like, boop, get back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I liked the revelation that the mechanization has its flaws and that Echo has all of the information now too. So he knows how to get him out, and it's just such great classic Star Wars that you're not going to like it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what aren't they going to like?
Yeah.
A slim pole with no railings and then escalating that. Building on Wrecker's fear of heights.
Yeah.
Right. And at first it's kind of like comedy, like we have to take an elevator. Ha ha ha. You have to be in the top of a skyscraper, Wrecker.
Yep.
No one would like.
I was like, crawl, guys, crawl, hands and knees, grab that thing.
Hands and knees. Come on.
I love heights. Put me at Glacier Point in Yosemite looking out the valley. You get me 2 feet within the edge.
Yeah.
I go ghost white. I start sweating. You have to pull me back. I feel you, Wrecker. I feel you.
Yeah. Understandable. I think one moment of comedy that I really liked within this sort of raising of stakes and, you know, escalation of high places without rails in Star Wars is Anakin asking, does anyone have a brilliant idea? And Tech just saying, I do have a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Like, it's a great subversion of a kind of action adventure movie trope.
I like Tech.
And I really do. I like Tech when we first met him. I think just this beat elevated him to definitely my favorite now of the Bad Batch, to that he has this brilliant idea that he has recorded the Kira Dax screams. And I believe it's Hunter who just says, like, it's his hobby. He records everything. It's like, A little creepy Tech, and B, such a cool idea and such a cool plan of, like, I recorded their screams so they will come to us.
I in that moment wanted Tech to have the name of Neb Nert or Turb Net Turb, and just have him be like Neb. I've got to get it right. Neb Turb. Anyways, Ben Burt backwards, because that's what Ben Burt would go do, right? That's the blaster sound. That's how it's like, oh, I have this sound of a wire I tapped with a screwdriver one day.
You are right.
You know?
You are totally right. He is the Ben Burt of the Bad Batch.
Yeah, he is. Why would you have this? Why not?
Turb Neb, yeah.
Turb Neb. Sorry, I couldn't get it right.
Yeah.
I have trouble enough spelling forward, not backward. So, it was great. Yeah, I like that you just was like, Yep, this is what I do. I'm Tech.
Yeah. How did you feel about the literal jumping onto the Kira Dax?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't like it. I mean, I liked it in terms of the show. I was watching this morning going, nope. I die.
Right?
I die, because you got to time that.
We literally just did that, and I, in Jedi Fallen Order, right?
Yes. Oh, my gosh, that one level.
Yeah, you had to do it again and again. And I missed
and it
a
upset
lot.
Me and it scared me and it triggered me. Why? And so I was like upset with the Kira Dax. You know what's going on. The Eagles wait for Gandalf. Just come on. Get under there. Float. Hover for a little bit. Let them jump down. But worked out great.
Yeah, I like that Anakin is the one who asks him, how do we get on these? Like, jump. I'm like, well, kind of not a problem for Anakin. Like, this is going back to Attack of the Clones. Like, he does this on the regular. This is how he gets to work in the morning, is jumping off a tall thing and landing on a moving object. No problem, right?
This is why I hate flying. I hate when he does that. Yeah.
I hate when he does that. I think definitely it's one of those things of, like, all right, I have to expand my mind of Star Wars canon, that clones are, this is one of the training missions they go through on Kamino, jumping off high things onto moving objects. Because having done this in video games, it's like, I would miss.
The timing. Oh, God.
I would absolutely miss. Most people would miss. So, like, amazing clones.
Don't miss.
Yeah. Echo did it, too.
Yeah.
So then we get on to the they're chased by the D-Wings and have that moment we talked about where they figure out how to veer with the Kirdak and smash the one D-Wing droid and briefly escape for the other in the clouds. They get reunited with the Poltex. The D-Wing droids do a reconnaissance buzz and one of them escapes. So that's all functional. So they know.
Yeah.
As Anakin says, if I know Wat Tambor, he's sending, he's sending droids. So Poltex, understandably mad that war is coming to them, because that is exactly what they asked to not happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Rex goes on this speech that you and I have been talking about. So let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Tell me about what you loved.
So again, you could say this is a moment we've seen in Clone Wars many times before. A culture on the outside of the galaxy.
Lerman, I believe.
Yeah. Just who's not involved in the war or anything. And hey, we got to choose. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right. We have heard that before. But look at it in terms of just Rex having a moment. We talk about the relationship with the clones and the war and while they're fighting and how they definitely realize, hey, we're people too. We're not numbers off of an assembly line.
Yeah.
And the weird relationship with it. So to have him have that moment, to not have Anakin be like, well, look, the Jedi say, or even Obi-Wan to Boss Nass and Qui-Gon to Boss Nass, not to have that moment, to have Rex do it because the echoes meant so much to him. It was his idea, but his hunch, his foreboding, shadowy hunch that something's going wrong.
His sense of that's my friend.
That's my friend.
Humanity in this algorithm. Yeah.
And there's some echoes again with Anakin and Vader and all those kind of things. But to have that moment of just like, no, this is why we fight, and this could be you.
Yes.
This could be you, you very wonderfully, beautifully organic culture that's flying in the sky with your little Kira Dax, big one.
Symbiotic relationship with Kira Dax.
And the reaction to have all the Kira Dax, or the Poltex be, when they really focus on him.
When they see him.
Poor Echo's just kind of standing there like, yep, hey, That's why the moment really worked for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we noted it last week. This is another, you know, this is Rex's version of whipping off the sunglasses.
Yep.
To take the helmet off and get the humanity of, yes, like, I'm taking the mask off. I'm taking the, you know, mechanization off, if you will.
Look
and and here's my face. And specifically, they took away his freedom, his humanity, tried to turn him into a machine.
There you go.
Right? Like, these are central Star Wars ideas, and it's so hard and painful to hear that and see Anakin nodding along.
I know.
And going, like, Anakin's going to do that to himself.
Yep.
He's going to allow that to be done to him. He's going to do it to himself.
Part of the layers of the torture. But yeah, it's like, hey, Poltex, choose one or all of these. Going to happen to you.
Yeah. You're going to take away your freedom, your humanity. And you're right. The Poltex is really, you know, It's one of those beautiful, it'd be great if different people could be convinced, to see here is, you know, the exhibit A of horror, and for them to immediately understand and empathize. I think that's what I'm struggling towards, to have that the Poltex have immediate empathy, that it's not like, too bad that happened to you, weirdo, get out of our village.
Yeah.
But they can immediately empathize and go, we imagine the horror of what that would be. Mm. It's not something that just happened to you. We can imagine what it would feel like to happen to us, and therefore we care.
Yep. Yep. You feel it. You see it. You feel it. It's all there in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we get into, I think, what had been the original, as you were telling me, moral of this episode, where the basic, like, the war is going to come to you eventually, so choose a side.
Yeah.
Which, again, Anakin is still being a little less assertive and aggressive than we've seen him at many moments in the Clone Wars.
Right.
In other moments of Clone Wars, that might have been like a fist wagging.
Yeah.
Yelling, come on, get in the fight. But he's still a little bit chilled out in this arc. So I like that he's just like, war's going to come for you and you're going to have to choose a side eventually. Like, that's interesting to me.
Yeah, he's very Aragorn in this scene. Just open war is upon you. It's here. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. So then we get into the big battle. They were not named in the episode, but old Wikipedia told me that these are called Octopatara Tri-Droids.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Let's try it again. Octopatara Tri-Droids.
Or walkers, as Anakin said.
Because it would have been weird if Anakin was like, let me try to say that again. They're like octopuses.
Though I think a certain section of Star Wars fans would have wanted Anakin to say, go get the Octopatara Tri-Droids, who we also call walkers during some situations.
And have Rex answer back. You can't just say walkers, sir. Yeah. General, we need the specifics.
It's a plot hole if you just say something quick.
Yeah. Did you say AT-AT? That's not how it's said, General. It's AT-AT now. Get it right, General. So then there is the big battle. We see the clones, you know, are the Bad Batch in Rex are kicking ass, but they also seem like they're stressed. We see some Poltex die. For you, like... what did you enjoy about this as an action scene? Any kind of bigger ideas in play in this action scene for you?
What I enjoyed from it was just some fun playground action. And, you know, you're getting your G.I. Joes this time. I keep drawing the conclusion, the comparison to specialized units within G.I. Joe. And that's what the Bad Batch reminds me of. It's total 80s.
Yeah.
This one's the Brawny. This one's this, you know, or Transformers. They all form a giant Constructicon robot. So it's just a lot of cool stuff. There's one shot kind of pulled back of the walkers coming in. And I'm like, this is like Spielberg's War of the Worlds or Orson Welles's War of the Worlds
Orson Welles' radio, so you can imagine it. But it totally reminded me of War of the Worlds, the 50s one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just great. You know, and somewhere Lucas is probably smiling.
Yeah.
You know, it really looked good. So from that point, and then the flip side of it is just the horrors. I mean, you made it in your notes here, but like some real clear kind of graphic death on the Poltex side, and one of the Kyrdak, which gets me just every time.
Oh yeah, Kyrdak. Yeah, I didn't like the Kyrdak so much. Yeah, I was curious to see, since Disney Plus has been real weird PG-13, and since I think Rebels and certainly Resistance dialed back on the violence, and Clone Wars would be like, hey, we're on Cartoon Network. It's for kids. Here's lots and lots and lots of death. Clone Wars has always been much more brutal. So I was curious to see if they would tone it down. And for this one Poltech shot, nope.
No.
It really, the droid just pushes him down.
Yeah.
And shoots him.
Shoots
like, in some ways, it's like, if you're gonna, you know, it's not graphic. It's not, it's not Saving Private Ryan, right?
Yeah, right.
But it is like, war is real. I kind of appreciate they don't just give a pep speech and then all the Poltecs survive. There's not this sort of, it's a great sci-fi fantasy balance to say there are consequences.
Yep.
But that doesn't necessarily mean don't fight.
That makes the choice to get involved that much more powerful, and to see it on display is a good choice.
Yeah, yeah. So I liked seeing. I thought, for me, the other thing that was really powerful in this scene is going from the first episode of this arc where Rex was trying to get on board with them. They were trying to get on board with Rex. They were absolutely accepting Rex's commands, but the Bad Batch was in sync in their own way, but it also seemed like they were kind of going out of their comfort zones and improvising. I like that moment where Octopatara Tridroid was going to stomp on the Poltech, and for a second I thought, that's going to happen because this is brutal. And Wrecker catching it, and then having that moment of fear for Wrecker again. Is he just going to be ground into dust, you know? And there's also something just kind of, there's a great tension in Anakin standing above it all, watching it, kind of calling the shots and just being like, Anakin, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, on the one hand, it's like, oh, you're being a general, you're being a Jedi, you're being passive, you're only going to act when you're needed. But at the same time, like, get in there! Come on, Anakin! Fly that dragon into battle! Exactly. So then when he does get into action in that... Because Anakin's been a little... He has been understanding of Rex's emotions towards Echo.
Yeah.
But I think he's had this like a little bit of, I'm removed and I'm trying to step back instead of be the passionate one. Check on Rex and go like, are you sure you're not making rash decisions? So to have that moment of actual connection between Echo and Anakin, where it's like, you know, still showing off, you know, it reminds you that, Echo has been in these battles with Anakin many times before.
Right.
In that delivery of his of like, you know me.
Yeah.
It's not at all cocky. It's just calm. And then to see him do great, big, fun Jedi stuff, culminating in the leap away and the push forward with the Force was really cool.
The leap was really good. It looked good. Again, these episodes are just looking so fantastic. I like that moment a lot.
Yeah. So great, great big action scene with some great War of the Worlds vibe and some sad Poltech casualty. So then getting towards the end of the episode, we get that it's ominous time because they won the battle. But we get Wat Tambor saying we're going to recoup our losses.
Yeah.
And we get Rex saying to Echo, well, Echo thanking Rex for coming for him, which had lots of, you know, Han Solo to Luke, you know, resonance. Echo and Rex having the ominous old times.
Yeah.
Rex saying, it's going to be just like old times. And Echo saying,
old times.
So how did that stuff hit you? What did it make you think of or feel?
Well, I mean, you know, ominous indeed. Like, I love this little moment. He's back. And because the whole time the whole episode... I'm not going to say Echo recovered fast because it's just you needed him, but, you know, and he wasn't like in the thick of it. He's up there shooting when he could and everything, and he's climbing. But, like, you know, I would want to sit down a little bit. You know, he's going strong, but I don't know. At the end, I'm scared of what's happening next. Again, luckily, everything just seems to pop out of my mind. I don't remember what's going on. And I, again, credit to Alex Damon. He put this in my head of is he plugged into, does he know anything about Order 66 or anything knows is coming? I don't know how that would work logistically, or if the inhibitor chip was, I don't know. You know, what is it specific to him, or is it something bigger coming down the line that he knows of? Or is he just like, I didn't like the old times.
that ominous, like what he meant by old times.
Yeah, old times. That's where I'm going.
Yeah, I think I just emotionally really took it as the sort of inevitability of change. And I think there's a lot of that in Star Wars, like I thought of Shmi saying, you can't stop the change anymore. Right. You can stop the sun from setting, of Rex wants to cope with this tragedy by going, I fixed it. Mm-hmm. And we'll get those disturbing holes in your body all plugged up. We'll get you back in the arm and it'll be Rex and Echo again. And I think Echo, having been through this, just knowing I am fundamentally changed and there's no point in denying it. I will never just be the Echo I was again.
Yeah, which we've talked about before. That comes up a lot of just, I don't know what today's like a Lord of the Rings cross reference, but just, the Frodo thing of, the Grey Havens of just, you can't go back. I can see some of that in there too.
But I also really like the functional thing. And I do feel like that was set up of, he doesn't just know the layout of this base, like what technology has the Techno Union been developing? And I have read bits and pieces of the animatic. I know one thing that's allegedly going to happen, but I am in the same place. And again, I know listeners, some of you know the animatic by heart. So we are coming at it from a place of blissful ignorance for the most part right now. Mm-hmm. So we have the freedom to speculate. Again, I know.
I really do.
Speculation is kind of weird right now when half of the audience knows exactly what's going to happen. The other half isn't sure. But for me, I'd be really excited to see, okay, Echo, Rex took this risk. Anakin backed him. Mm. Echo was alive. Humanity is being valued. So it would be great to see some positive thing happen for the Republic because of that. Right.
Yeah.
So Echo be able to go like, the Techno Union's developing this thing that we can try to put a stop to.
Decimator at large, a big Decimator 2.0,
But then on the flip side, the Wat Tambor thing still has me frightened that he's got some flip the switch and that he can spy through Echo's eyes on on the Republic and is going to do something horrible there. So I'm looking forward to next week, but bracing for sadness.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, truly, it's been a blessing to have a busy time in my life where now I don't remember what's going on in the episodes I've already read.
Yeah, yeah. What do you want the sort of, not necessarily literal conclusion of the Bad Batch, but the Bad Batch themselves, those characters, what do you want the kind of last beat, the grace note of their story to be?
I have been thinking just in terms of the literal, like, cool. What happens to them? Do we know what they get involved? They would have been great help in Revenge of the Sith. Just those questions we have sometimes as fans, and the send off and kind of this, do they impart some final lesson to the regs, or some, definitely the respect. I would love them to have the respect for the regular clones, and how they've come together and work and change from just this brash, cocky, confident, standoffish group in the beginning, particularly Crosshair, and to actually be part of the team, but still having to go do what they do. Have some good handshake, some Predator handshake moment. Give me a Carl Weathers, Schwarzenegger handshake or something.
Yeah, because they doubted Rex. So I think that I want them to put some respect on Rex, right?
Yep.
And I think, and then for Rex to give it back of like, I learned a lot from watching you. I've never seen four clones more in sync, That kind of thing would be awesome. Any other characters or moments or planets or anything you wanted to mention?
There's something I've been thinking about, and I've been seeing it a little bit in the Twitter sphere, so certainly not something I thought of myself here. But I do enjoy now having a little more subtext to Anakin and Mustafar kind of seeking out and being real upset at Wat Tambor.
Oh, yeah, right? Right.
It's like, that's great.
I've always loved, is a weird thing to say about a vicious massacre.
Yeah.
But, the Jedi Temple attack is something in the moment he's been convinced that he has to do.
Has to do.
To increase his strength in the dark side. Obviously he's got lots of reasons to be angry at the Jedi. But the Separatists, like going back to that discussion with Tarkin in the Citadel episode, like sometimes we go far enough. Just like the horrible dark side.
Yeah.
I get to just slaughter them all. And then, this really does add some weight. I was thinking about that too. Like, what happens to what?
He's sitting at the end of that table, right?
Yeah. That's going to, Darth Vader's going to end your profit stream, Wat Tambor.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
Like, now I want to see that moment again. Like, I mean, that we never really see. I want the door to close and have Anakin's line, like, you know, like you just said, or just like, hey, this is for Echo. I still like him or something like
that. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I love that I just really do love when the movies we know so well can occasionally get some added context or make you think about something, a scene you've seen 50 times again.
Yeah.
I just love that stuff. And I think that's part of the fun of the supplemental material, comics, novels, maps, whatever it is. And an episode like this where, you know, Anakin at that moment, you were so focused on Nuke Gunray saying, but Sidious promises peace, which is really just a lesson, and you fell for something else, scummy guys. But to have a moment of, oh yeah, this I'm not a mindless cyborg Vader now who's kind of at war with himself. I'm Anakin. I don't like you, Watt Danbor.
Yes, and you're going to have a conversation with my lightsaber right now. Mm-hmm. Very aggressive non-negotiations. Yeah, I totally agree. That's such a great example of that scene is totally explicit and easy to understand in the film.
Yeah.
You know exactly what's going on, but stories like this, if you're the kind of Star Wars fan who wants to dive into them, enrich what's already in the movie.
Yep.
And it's great. Only other moment I really wanted to respond to is just kind of a couple of comments and thoughts about Jedi.
Okay.
Like, I love that Hunter said hard to, you know, keep up with the Jedi or hard to, you know, top a Jedi. I like reminding us because, you know, sometimes in the Clone Wars, one small critique I have, sometimes the Jedi are just like, they're just deflecting blaster bolts, and like other times, like, come on, unleash. So it was fun to see Hunter, this leader of this really great group, go like, it's we're good, but we can't do that.
That's cool.
That's what a Jedi is.
Yeah.
And then the Jedi are welcome here.
Mm-hmm.
This is another kind of bittersweet moment of this is really an arc that is showing Anakin is a hero. And seeing that connection with these, what are presented to us as, you know, kind and thoughtful and brave society of people, saying, we recognize that you're a good person and you're welcome here. I'm like,
Anakin.
Oh, the tragedy. All right. So we are going to wrap up our look at On the Wings of Kira Dax with some fun questions, as we always do. Action figure. If you could have an action figure of anything you saw in this week's episode, what do you got?
So I wouldn't mind just eventually a Poltech, the Poltech leader. Again, I don't remember his name. But give me a 3-pack of Watt Tambor and his assistants, radio control, that I can just drive around my kitchen floor.
Just floating around, terrorizing the Chihuahuas.
Exactly. I'm not saying I'm rooting for Watt Tambor, but I just, there's something about the floaty, just on wheels or whatever.
I think that's what it is. I think that was those wheelie rolls in the back of their sneakers that the kids like so much. Yeah. Yeah. Man, I think in the first episode I brought up tech, but this one, I want the 3 3/4 tech with Kira Dak, and I want you to be able to hit a button on Tech's back and hear the Kira Dak scream, right?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And you can use Tech to record things in your real life.
Yes.
I'm going to record my brother's scream, and then he'll have to come running on my Tech 3 3/4 with Kira Dak action figure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, to close us out, we've been doing a moral for our podcast episodes. Ken, what is the moral of this episode of the Clone Wars Report?
I think today's lesson is sometimes you have to jump.
Sometimes you have to jump.
Yeah.
And with that, we are going to jump out of the balcony onto the wings of some Kira Dax. Until next week, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.